Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Hit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
I have yet to laugh in this movie, I'll just tell you that.
You picked it, motherfuckers. Just remember that. You know the problem with Hollywood is? They make shit. Unbelievable, unremarkable shit.
I was legitimately offended.
You were offended?
I was offended.
I didn't know you could get offended.
I was offended.
This did it.
I was absolutely offended.
They're fucking making shit up, I mean.
Inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail.
Please don't lie.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm there holding a mic in my hands and now I'm talking all over. Okay.
Welcome to Cinephobe, the podcast where we break down the movies you're afraid to admit you love. Zach Harper, joined by Amin Al-Hassan, Anthony Mays, pushing the buttons, producing the show. This week on Cinephobe, a very special episode with the 2007 holiday Christmas classic, Fred Claus. Fred Claus stars Vince Vaughn, who was coming off, he was hot off the breakup in 2006.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Absolutely. Fantastic movie. He was set to star in another Christmas movie the next year, Four Christmases, in 2008.
Oh, one of my least favorite movies of all time.
It's not.
It fell apart from really quick.
Went from
like banger after banger after banger. And then like, I think, you know what's funny? I kind of feel like breakup kind of said, hey, man, this guy could be a lead in a rom-com. Right. And then he started going for these rom-com roles and then it just didn't work out after that.
Yeah.
He's a clown. Honestly, he needs to be a clown.
And honestly, I kind of think like this is where it started. I really do.
This movie?
This movie is where it started.
I mean, he's more of a clown than a romantic lead in this movie.
Yeah, but he's not. But we'll get into it. But it's lost. He didn't have his fastball in this one. I'd say that. Also stars Paul Giamatti as Santa Claus, his brother in the movie. Paul had just done Shoot 'Em Up and The Nanny Diaries. He's going to be in the HBO miniseries John Adams in 2008. We also get appearances from John Michael Higgins. He's the brother in The Breakup. And he's been in like every Christopher Guest movie. Rachel Weisz is in this movie. She's the love interest. She was just in The Fountain and is going to be in Definitely Maybe in 2008. We also get Kathy Bates, Elizabeth Banks, Ludacris, Kevin Spacey, and Bobby J. Thompson in this one.
A very heart-touching, heartwarming role from Bobby J.
For Bobby J., you're right, exactly. It actually is probably his most family-focused role.
Range?
Yeah, he does show a lot of range. He's not just a clown in this one, right? He's usually very cartoonish. Claus, directed by David Dobkin, who also did Wedding Crashers, Shanghai Nights, and The Change Up.
And the executive producer of RIPD.
Wow, this dude has nothing but hits under his belt.
Nothing but hit? The Change Up?
Is that the one with Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, it's Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman, right? They piss in a fountain or something.
Sounds like he had one hit. He directed the sequel to Shanghai Noon.
No, Wedding Crashers.
I know. I'm saying Wedding Crashers was his hit.
Oh,
Don't like Shanghai Nights?
It's fine. Shanghai Noon is a lot better, which he was not involved with at all.
I've never seen either.
We've never seen Shanghai Noon or Shanghai Nights.
That's kind of surprising, Zach.
Those are great movies, man.
Are they?
Great buddy cop movies set in the 1800s. Great buddy cop movies. You'll laugh. You'll cry.
Wow, Shanghai Nights is 66%. Shanghai Noon is 79%.
Dude, these were good movies. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
I'm not being like cinephobe with me. Like, oh, it was a great movie. Like, no, that's a legit good movie, man.
All right. I buy it. Dan Fogelman wrote the screenplay. He's also written Cars, Cars 2, Crazy Stupid Love, and Last Vegas.
And he's the creator of This Is Us.
Oh, he's creator. Oh, okay.
Said that as if he created you. He's
No, because I saw This Is Us on his thing, and I was like, I don't know what he's been involved with that. You know, how deep he is in that. So I just didn't mention it, but I didn't know.
You should know the dude on GP. Like, he's just probably there.
Last Vegas might be added to the list at some point. That is an upsetting movie.
Is that the one with the old guys go to Vegas?
Yeah. And who's the dude from 40-Year-Old Virgin? Roman Emalco or Romany Malco. Yeah. If you tweet out the movie Las Vegas, he has someone on his staff or part of a PR firm or something that will favorite a mention of every movie he's in. So like, I've tweeted about Las Vegas before, not tagged him, not mentioned him, and he will favorite it, his account. The real weird thing. So that's just a little tip for you.
What does that do? I wonder what does that do, though?
I don't know.
Pumps the overall numbers for Romany Malco.
Yeah, it just lets you know I'm watching, motherfucker. Like, that's, you know, just a watch what you say kind of thing.
What if you say it was a tour de force? Like, you get a reply then?
He might. You might get a reply. You might get a retweet. I don't know. We'll try that. Jesse Nelson also wrote this, the story. By the way,
I like how you assumed it's someone on his staff, not him.
Why? I mean, but what a sad existence that is if that's him.
Boy, let me tell you something, man. Actors are not happy.
You think that's true.
banging supermodels and stuff. No, man, it's a lot of introspection and grief and self-flagellation. And favoriting of tweets, like just searching Twitter all hours of the night. Hey, did someone mention Las Vegas?
I guess so. I mean, I feel like Las Vegas should not be in the mix there. 40-year-old virgin, sure. Any of the good stuff he's been in. Jesse Nelson also wrote this. She's known for Stepmom, I Am Sam, and she played Ralph in So I Married an Ex-Murderer, one of my favorite comedies from the 90s. No one else likes that movie?
It's not like my favorite Mike Myers. It's fine.
Oh, really?
It's one of those movies. Like there's one era in movies that I just don't enjoy watching movies from. And that's like this brief window from like 91 to 93.
Okay.
That's fair. Just don't like if it's in the 80s, I'm good. Like, oh, love a good 80s
movie. Once we get to the mid-90s, you're good.
I'm good again. Like all the great ones. But like 92, like the same thing, like Philadelphia, Love Potion number 9.
That's the second movie you came up with from the early 90s?
I'm just thinking about early 90s movies, right? I have no interest in watching this.
Love Potion number 9?
I don't know.
What? If you gave me 1,000 guesses of movies you would mention on this podcast, it would have never been any of them.
City Slickers 1.
What about City Slickers 2?
I like City Slickers too.
It might be better.
I like City Slickers too. City Slickers 1, didn't like it. Don't even want to watch it. Like, it's not even, I didn't even want to watch it.
All right. Yeah, I think I like the second one better. I like the first one though. Although Billy Crystal pissed me off. I'm done with him. He shit on the Fast and Furious franchise. I'm like, dude, you made some real terrible stuff.
I stand with you, William. Well, speaking of real terrible stuff, isn't it amazing that Paul Giamatti is this very highly respected actor? Who has an amazing catalog of just shit.
He's definitely one of those dudes that like has said yes to everything.
Well, he didn't break out until he was pretty old.
Was it Sideways?
It was before Sideways. It was American Splendor.
Oh, that's right. That was before Sideways.
But before that, like, yeah, anything in his career before that, he was taking any part he could get. And then I think that's a hard trait to scrub from your profile if you're going forward. Then you're getting offered a lot more stuff and you just say yes.
When was American Splendor?
2003.
That sounds right to me. Yeah,
he has a shit ton of bad movies after that. The Lady in the Water.
Lady in the Water, bad.
I'm saying he was getting way more offers at this point.
He's so used to saying yes all the time, right?
So yeah, he just said yes until he started being like a little bit more selective until really late in the game. I don't know, man. I feel like Samuel Jackson. You say, yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff, but overall you think of like great roles. I think Paul Giamatti, he's been in a lot of stuff. And all I think of are the bad roles. Like John Adams, like think about it, his best roles have been on TV shows, right?
Is that true?
John Adams and Billions. Those are the two best things he's ever done.
Sideways.
Sideways is great.
Is pretty amazing.
He's in Cinderella Man, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, that movie's all right, man. Second of all, it's not better than what he did in John Adams or Billions. Third of all, by the way, Sideways, a movie about wine. Don't want to watch it. I think I've told you.
Have you never seen it?
I've never seen it.
It's legitimately good.
I've told you guys the story that my dad had a cousin when he was growing up that was averse to anything with horses. So if they say, we're going to go watch this movie, say, are there horses in it? You say, yes, he's not going to the movie. Like Back to the Future 2, he's going to that movie. Back to the Future 3, no.
Oh, man.
Because it has horses in it. That's it.
He had back-to-back bangers in 1998. And granted, he's not the star of these, but Saving Private Ryan and then Negotiator.
And the Truman Show.
He's in it. Oh, yeah, he's in the Truman Show, too. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He works in the TV studio.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah. But yeah, no, The Negotiator, man, that's a great movie. He's all over that movie.
But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, other than Sideways, there's nothing really here that's like, yeah, Paul Giamatti was super great in that movie in a starring role.
Are you guys out of your mind?
It's a tough list, dude.
Shoot 'em Up?
Yes.
No. Shoot 'em Up's good.
No, it's not.
What? Yeah.
No.
You guys
no,
out of not. Your mind? Someone gets stabbed with a carrot. This is getting away from us. All right. Synopsis for Fred Claus. Fred Claus, Santa's bitter older brother, is forced to move to the North Pole to help Santa and the elves prepare for Christmas in exchange for cash. That's pretty accurate. Tagline for this: Christmas comes every year, but this holiday season, Santa's brother is coming along for the ride. That's a terrible tagline. Well, we have extras.
And very wordy, by the way.
Yeah, we have extra taglines. Everybody has that one relative who can't help but cause problems over the holidays, even Santa.
Oh, I thought Santa was a relative that caused problems. I identified with the protagonist of the movie. I'm sorry.
Next one, Meet Fred. That's it. One after that, Santa's brother is coming to town. And then the last one, you're invited to a very unusual family reunion. You're terrible.
Oh, okay. I mean, not, some of them worse than others, though.
Yeah, $100 million budget for this movie. Grossed 72 domestic, 97.8 worldwide.
Yeah, I can see that. It definitely doesn't appeal to a global audience. Like, it's very, you know, Vince Vaughn shtick, like doing his little, him doing that kind of comedy, which I don't think translates really well, especially if you put it in a different language. It definitely wouldn't translate. But the fact that it cost him that much, was that just to make the elves?
Is
that,
oh my god!
It's got to be right. Yeah, that's got to be fully elf related.
So much CGI on that department, and also the cast could not have been cheap.
Yeah, that's a big cast. Let's jump into this movie before listening to the rest of this podcast. Fred Claus is available on demand on DirecTV. It's on AMC, or you have to rent it like I did before I found out it was on AMC. There's $2 I'll never get back. All right. Fred Claus receives a 20% from critics on 142 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, 45% from the audience on over 371,000 ratings.
How do people not like this movie?
I'm telling you, man, you didn't have his fastball. Sure. And it's long, man. It's long.
It is long. It does drag, and it does start to get a little sappy towards the end. But I did enjoy it. And by the way, yeah, you know, I think about it, it is a pretty expensive cast. Yeah. Kevin Spacey, like.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey's like the fourth person in that movie, right?
Ludacris is 4 days of shooting on a green screen for his 2 minutes of screen time probably cost a couple $1 million.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Positive reviews. Richard Roper of Ebert and Roper. There are some scattered big laughs and a sweet message here, so I'm giving it a mild recommendation. Karina Chicano of LA Times. Fred Claus turns out to be not bad for a Santa movie, which I suppose could be interpreted as either faint or excessive praise, depending on your view. Not really that positive. Wesley Morris of the Boston Globe. Vince Vaughn's naughtiness has never seemed so approachably nice. And then a lot of these reviews on the negative side, it's a lot of Christmas references. It's a lot of Christmas puns. Joshua Rothkopf of Time Out. Not a flake on the ground, and we already have our first lump of coal.
Oh,
Roger Ebert of Chicago Sun-Times. Fred Claus has apparently studied Elf and figured out everything that could have gone wrong with its fish-out-of-water Christmas fable.
Elf is not a good movie.
A lot of people compared this movie to Elf in the reviews.
That's weird. Other than like it's just because it's fresh out of water, but it's not because Fred Claus is not out of. Well, I guess he's out of water because he goes to the North Pole. I like the stuff that before he gets to the North Pole. That's I think my favorite part of the movie is just him being a dick and not shitting on Santa.
Sure, Stephanie Zacharek of Salon. Even though Vaughn knows how to build a pretty good performance out of little more than exasperated eye rolling, he's just coasting here, and his scenes with Giamatti have no weight and no energy. Bill Goodykintz of Arizona Republic, bah humbug. That's the review.
Well, what a witty motherfucker. You know what? A lot of creatives like shit on critics. It was like, you're just mad because you couldn't do it yourself. I feel like that's just a very defensive like reaction to being criticized. But that critic right there, yeah, you're fucking hack. Get out of here, bah humbug.
And then the last two reviews, Stephen Hunter of the Washington Post, Vaughn's con man jive doesn't get much play in this one. He spends most of his time as a bitter creep, and the writing by Dan Fogelman isn't sharp enough to make the hipster at the North Pole theme pay off in any meaningful way. I didn't feel like he was a hipster at the North Pole.
No.
I don't like, I feel like that person just learned the word hipster and didn't and just used it improperly.
I mean, it was 2007.
Yeah.
Or maybe this person was like, well, if I had been at the North Pole, I would have just been head over heels. Oh, you think you're too cool to be around that Santa and his elves? That's that guy's thinking. Fuck you, guy.
And the last one, Peter Howell of the Toronto Star. It senselessly dims an idea that should shine as brightly as Rudolph's nose. So after that hacky again, writing.
Get out of here.
All right.
No one's buying your screenplay. Get over it.
Let's get into the movie. We start out in a random cottage. A woman's giving birth to a fat baby. It's the fattest baby the nurse has ever seen. I wrote the question, is this his first chimney drop?
Wow.
No, that's not good.
Speaking of hacks.
That's no good.
Damn, you were already geared up for this movie, huh?
Wow.
Seconds in.
Wow, okay. I thought that would hit a little better than that. Amin, what's your first note for this movie?
My first note is I love this movie. Like, that's literally what I wrote. I love this movie. Just going in, I get really excited, man. When it's a movie that I like that we're about to do, like, it always puts me in a good mood.
The baby fresh out of the chimney says ho ho ho, or says ho ho immediately. They name the kid Nicholas. His older brother Frederick is watching from upstairs. He calms down and promises to be the best big brother in the world. Now we get kind of some growing up moments. The child Nicholas is a real kiss ass, giving away presents to orphans. No matter what Fred does, Nicholas upstages him. Kathy Bates loves Nicholas, doesn't really care about Fred. It fuels Fred to become a jerk, and Nick becomes a saint. And I wrote, oh, shit, Saint Nick is Santa Claus. What a realization.
Oh,
let's see what they did.
We should point out that the reason that Fred becomes a dick is because no one understands him except for Chirp Chirp, the bird. And Chirp Chirp's home is destroyed by Nick, and Chirp Chirp never returned.
Yes. Is that what happens? I missed that completely, because they focus in on at the end on a bird, and I didn't understand it.
Yep, that's Chirp Chirp. Chirp Chirp returned.
What was I doing?
Chirp Chirp never returned, yeah.
I was kind of texting, I guess.
You were still laughing to yourself about your chimney joke.
About the chimney joke, yeah.
He was writing it down.
All right, we go to present day. Fred hates Santa decorations. He is a repo man repossessing a flat screen TV. I'm sorry, a plasma TV. They mentioned plasma a couple of times. Plasma TV. He goes on a rant, or he's taking it from a little girl. The girl comes out and kicks him. He goes on a rant about saving the girl from becoming fat from the TV and talks about her life getting better.
Here's
the thing.
This is one of the great Vince Vaughn little like
what
streams of consciousness. Oh, come on, man.
No. This is where I think he didn't have his fastball.
Yeah, man. This is I literally looked it up and wrote it down. This is what he said. You're going to get hooked on that. I can see it now. 16,000 bags of Cheetos later. You wake up, you're 35 crying about your life in front of the soaps. I did you a favor. You get outside, play around, make some friends, play kick the can, do some athletic stuff. Go to school. You're comfortable to play sports. You have any ethnic in your background? Any ethnicity in your background? I bet you do. It's America. You know what I mean? Put it on an application for college. All of a sudden, you get a little extra money. Uncle Sam's done the wiser. You take that extra money, you buy a motorcycle. Maybe you meet a guy at school. Then you get pregnant with a child. It worked out with the guy. It doesn't work out. Who cares? Come on, man. You didn't think that whole bit was funny?
I didn't think he delivered it well. I didn't think the writing was strong. Like, to me, he starts going. I'm like, all right, I'm in. I'm in on this because I couldn't remember what the rant was. And then maybe my hopes were too high. I don't know. Like, it just a couple moments where I smiled, but like, I just.
Oh, man.
I wanted Wedding Crashers Vaughn.
He just kept. But you didn't like the way he just kept escalating?
He always. Like, that's his thing.
That's his but thing. He that's just what he does.
I know, but that's what's funny. That's why I laughed.
Nah, I think there are better rants later in the movie.
Oh,
I didn't like this one. He's keeping the plasma TV for himself. Remember when a plasma TV was a big thing, right? Now you just say a TV, a flat screen, or whatever, but there was a while where it's like, I got a plasma.
Well, the ironic thing is that plasma TVs burned out faster.
Right.
Yes, they were bad. They were bad.
They had like 2 years before they burnt out. You had to get a new one.
Fred's in a cab. Unless
you went to Costco.
Unless you went to Costco?
Yeah, at the time, Costco had lifetime warranties on their TVs.
Oh.
So we were just buying shit and sending it right back in and like, oh, it burnt out. And you get a new one right after get the upgrade. Because they wouldn't even check. It's not Costco wouldn't even plug in the TV to see if it was working or not. You just come back and say, yo, it burnt out. And they just look at, you know, as long as you have it. Well, it's on your account that you bought it. So they're like, all right, go ahead and pick like a 50-inch, like that was, or, you know, whatever the size is of equal or lesser value. But obviously, because the technology is getting better, you know, the equal value was a way better TV 18 months later. Anyways.
That's a good tip for 12 years ago, man. Well,
they because like not too long after they cut it, they made it a 2-year warranty. And then after that, it was just, all right.
Fred's in a cab. He gets pulled over. Or no, he gets it pulled over. He gets out of the cab because the driver's listening to Christmas music and he doesn't want to hear it. He goes up to Wanda. We meet Wanda, played by Rachel Weisz, and he hasn't called her recently about them moving in together. He's forgetting her birthday. We find out for their 3-year anniversary, he hinted that they'd go to France, and then he took her to a gambling riverboat in Indiana instead. She said, I was studying this for French for 3 weeks, and he said, I had to do it to throw it off your scent. And he said, but no one can take that away from you. I laughed a lot at that. The whole like exchange of like, and no one can take that away from you. That's yours. I thought that was a hilarious exchange.
That is a hilarious exchange. Also, when she asks him, you know what tomorrow is, he says, tomorrow's tomorrow. Today's today. We shouldn't be wasting it arguing with one another. That's a great way to get out of like any anniversary.
Right. We meet Slam, played by Bobby J. Thompson. He's a kid worried about Santa getting his puppy to him for Christmas Day. Fred goes into a rant about questioning Santa. This is a pretty good rant.
So, Amin, a couple episodes ago, you said that young Stu from Good Luck Chuck had a career. Bobby J. Thompson had a career, but do you know what he's doing now?
Oh, man. What? He's too old, probably. That's his problem. What's up?
He's on Wildin' Out. He's making bad rap music.
Oh, man.
I'm hearing too much talking. Tell if a nigga be quiet. I got a stick in the ride. Bet I can shoot while I drive. I might got your boo in the ride. I told her, suck it real slow for me, baby. Gonna get loose in the ride. And if I feel it too, then you fat, bitch.
And NBA predictions. He said, I bet money the Pelicans have a better record than the Lakers next season in June.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Well,
Bobby J.
Year's not over yet.
That's true.
Yeah.
Look, yeah, there's still time. Wouldn't it be funny? Like, we mock him on the recording of this podcast, and then Zion comes back, and LeBron and Anthony Davis get injured bumping into each other, and they end up having a better record than like Bobby J. Knew.
Bobby J. said so.
Bobby J., yeah.
His best role was
role models,
right?
Yeah. Oh, man, he kills in Role Models. I mean, that line of, you white, you're Ben Affleck, like, that's I hear that often.
In your head or out loud?
No, people say it to me all the time. We find out that Vince Vaughn, Fred, is trying to rent a space for a business, but he doesn't have the money.
You know who the realtor is?
I didn't even pay attention.
Maze, I literally thought you enjoy these weird cameos.
Always do.
Did you recognize who the realtor was?
No.
It was the dude who won the first Survivor, the gay dude.
Richard Hatch?
Richard Hatch.
What the fuck?
Richard Hatch was the realtor in that movie.
So now Fred gets the idea. He sees a Salvation Army Santa Claus ringing a bell, getting donations. So he goes over there and he sets up his own shop. What is it? People Helping People?
People Helping People, which of course is a callback to Wedding Crashers when he gets jerked off under the table.
No, it's about investing in companies that are ethically and morally defensible.
Well, like what? Give me an example.
Like what? Well, there's the company that we have where we're taking the fur or the wool from sheep, and we turn it into thread for homeless people to sew, and then they make it into cloth, which they in turn sew, and then make little shirts and pants for other homeless people to sell. It's a pretty good deal.
People helping people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well done. So he's trying to convince people to not go to the Salvation Army donation, to donate to him instead. He's just taking money out of people's hands as they're going, you know, trying to figure out what they can give. So the Salvation Army Santa comes over. He wants to see his working papers for the street. Three Santas confront him. He runs away. And now we've got a chase scene where there are so many Santas. They're running through a mall. They're falling over escalators. He gets cornered in a toy shop. He's got like the caution, you know, slippery floor signs in both hands. He's swinging. He's hitting people. He comes after. They come after him. They all dogpile on him. Now he's in jail.
SantaCon before SantaCon.
SantaCon before SantaCon. Right? Did this invent SantaCon?
Might have.
It might have. He's in jail. He's trying to get Wanda to pick up, but she's at a restaurant that he lied about them having a reservation at this really nice place.
Bonsai Palace.
So when we cut to her, she's sitting at this table while there's like a bamboo cage fight sumo wrestling event happening. There's the, you know, the cooks all have their knives out. They're yelling. It's not a romantic thing at all. She doesn't answer the phone.
Did you guys watch that scene with captions?
No.
The funniest thing in this movie to me was that when the sumo wrestlers are going at it in the bamboo cage, in parentheses, it says farting with each impact.
Yes.
All right. I didn't notice that, but okay.
That's the nuances and the touches. See that?
Nuance and touch.
You gotta be able to
pick up. I haven't even given a verdict on this movie, Amin. I just didn't like the first rant.
Well, you know what? The hell with you.
All right. So now he calls his brother Nick to bail him out of jail. Here's my question. Has Christmas only been going on for like 30, 40 years? Because Nick has become he looks like Santa now, right?
Right.
But he's only been doing this since he was like a boy. Well, and now you have a whole operation. So I'm trying to figure out, is this only been going for 30, 40 years? Or is Fred some kind of like Highlander or Wolverine type guy who doesn't age? And he's actually like 200 years old.
They're all Highlanders.
Yeah, they all are. That's what I took. They don't age. None of them do.
I didn't want to piss Amin off by getting too into the nitty gritty of like how the fairy tale-ness of this movie works. But like the idea is that none of them age.
Right. Well, here's the thing, Mace. I did want to piss Amin off.
No,
the logic of this movie is terrible.
It does not make any sense. Paul Giamatti looks like he's 40 years older than Vince Vaughn, even though Vince Vaughn is the older brother.
Because Santa Claus has to look a certain way. It's just like, have you guys never seen the Santa Claus with Tim Allen, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll talk about the Santa Claus. Don't worry. When we get to our own Claus.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, like, the idea that, like, look, he was a man who was like 45 or whatever, but when he became Santa Claus, the beard was white and you gained the weight and that's it. And no matter if you shave and try to go on a treadmill, you're going to look the way you're going to look. Same thing with Santa Claus. Like there was no middle age Santa Claus. He went straight from being a little kid to boom, that. As soon as he hit puberty, he was Santa Claus. And then Fred Claus, same thing. He got the magic about him, but you know, he stopped when he was just like regular middle age Fred Claus. I don't understand why you
hate the logic
about this. Oh, you wanted Santa Claus with black hair and like designs in his haircut and stuff.
No, I want some kind of explanation that Fred is actually 300 years old or whatever he is.
He is 300 years old.
There's no explanation of that.
He is. He's been a repo man in Chicago for 300 years, Zach.
That's terrifying. Oh, God.
Why do you need an explanation for that? How hard is this?
How hard is it, Zach?
Anyway, all right. Nick will send $5,000 for bail, but Fred then escalates it.
You know what? I'm going to give you something. I'm going to give you a gift this year. Oh. Yeah, I am. I'm going to give you $10,000 for Christmas in cash. Merry Christmas. Okay? How's that deal?
That's, I don't understand, though. I'm giving you five, Fred, so.
Nick, listen, you got to be open to someone else trying to give to you because it feels good for other people to give too, okay?
Yeah.
Go ahead, just send me $50,000 on top of the five, okay? Then hold your breath for a month. Let me go ahead and blow that up into 60, okay? Then I'm going to give you $10,000 off the top of that with the original $50,000 back. So that way I gave you $10,000. You gave me $5,000. I gave you $5,000. Merry Christmas.
Wait a second, Fred. $50,000 on top of the five?
$50,000, that's just icing on top of the cake. I have a very lucrative money deal going on. Nick, do me a favor. Don't make this complicated. I'm in the spirit. Let me give you a gift. Let one brother give another brother a gift for Christmas. I feel great about it. Let me feel good.
All right, whoa.
Please let me.
All right. Nick says to get the other money, he'll give him the five, but to get the other money, he's got to visit him. He's never visited before. He has a hard out on December 22nd. That's so he can pay the money to that business lease to the survivor guy. Fred visits Wanda, but she doesn't want to talk to him. She rejects him. She can't believe he stood her up and that they went to such a disgusting place where they were supposed to. Slam needs Fred to pretend to be his father because Child Protective Services is trying to take him away. We find out his dad is dead.
Did you skip the hey, Jerry Garcia, I'm having a talk with someone.
That's a funny line to you? That wasn't that good.
Oh, come on, man. All right, never mind. Go ahead.
You know what's happening, Maze? You know what's happening here is if Amin likes a movie, he decides that everything in it is funny.
No. If I think everything is funny, I like the movie. That's how that works.
I just like the way that, because you're the host, and Amin is unsatisfied with your hosting for certain movies because you're not hitting the right jokes.
He takes over.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Yeah. No. If I miss something, no, by all means, I mean, after you.
I like that line. I deserve all right. It. So the talking, we figure out that his dad's not alive.
Yeah, his dad's dead.
And he tries to pretend like he's adopted Bobby J. Who's, what's his name? What's the kid's name?
Bobby J. Thompson. Yeah. Slam.
Yeah. But obviously they see right through that. So he gives him this great like pep talk about how like
don't trust anyone.
Don't trust yourself.
Yeah.
A very cynical kind of like hardened life view to give a little kid right after he's being taken by Child Protective Services.
Yeah, he's got to be what, like 9 years old?
Something like that.
There's my next note. We're at 25 minutes of setup here. 25 minutes have gone by in this movie. It's a long setup. Now we get an elf in his apartment. It's dark as hell, so we can't really see him at first. This is Willie, played by John Michael Higgins. He's the head elf. He's struggling to grab Fred's luggage as they decide to go fly. Eventually, Fred grabs it. I'm sure that was a hilarious joke to you.
It's also a kid's movie. That's the thing you got to remember. Fred Claus is made to be a family movie, so you can't have 2 hours of Vince Vaughn being Vince Vaughn because kids ain't going to get that. So you got to have the little bits and stuff here and there for kids to identify with. You know, something you wouldn't know, Zach, about appealing to a larger audience. You like your little niche stuff. I get it. Oh, yeah, Nicolas Cage. We all like it. Look, sometimes you want to make a movie that more than you and Mike Ryan would like. How about that?
No, I only want movies that Mike Ryan and I like. I'm trying to get Mike Ryan to do this podcast.
I know. Billy Gill wants to do the podcast, too.
Oh, we should bring Billy in. Absolutely. Yeah. Find out a movie he wants to do.
He was the one that requested that, by the way. He's the one that suggested Mr. Magoo.
That came from him?
That came from Billy Gill. He's like, you got to do Mr. Magoo. It's so bad.
Oh, he gets the show.
Now he needs to come and explain himself.
He gets the show. Wow. Billy, thank you so much. All right. They fly off the roof using the reindeer and the sleigh. We are met by Charlene, played by Elizabeth Banks. That's the top assistant to Santa. Willie's in love with her. She can't remember Willie's name.
So let me get this straight. Santa's little helper, who seems to be running operations, and the head elf, who've worked together for centuries?
Yes.
Don't know each other's name?
Look.
He's that forgettable.
You know what? It's a big North Pole. There's a lot of elves on the
They're North. Around each you other think- constantly.
It's a lot of them. I'm around a lot of people constantly. It's been on every fucking body there. You guys are really weird.
But it's the head elf.
So?
If you need to know one elf's name, know this elf's name.
You know Stan Verrett.
Let me put it this way. If you're working in a mass production, highly kind of stratified organization.
You'd recognize John Buchagross.
You are reporting to your like direct report only. Like, this isn't a nice kind of like, go to the factories over in Japan, like Toyota factory. You think everyone knows everybody's name over there? They don't know. They know the boss, Santa Claus, and then they know the person. Champion. They know the person who they're reporting to directly. That's different. I'm different, though.
I mean, you're on The Jump, right? You're on the Emmy Award nominated The Jump, right? Yes. So you know Rachel Nichols, obviously. Do you know her lead producer?
I don't. I don't know who the lead producer is.
You don't know who the producer of The Jump is?
Not the lead producer. I have no idea who it is.
Really?
No, not really.
I don't agree. All right. Anyway, then all of a sudden we have little people who are security attack Fred because they think he has a gun.
They're not little people.
I didn't.
The idea is
that... But they're smaller than the elves, though.
There's two types of elves in this movie. There's little people, and then there's normal-sized people shrunk down with CGI. Yeah.
And it's just... This is a terrible gag in the movie. The whole security thing. It's not funny.
Again, you got to do something for the kids. Like, the idea that Santa has a security detail that, like beat up big old Fred, that's funny to kids, right? And then it's not about the security detail or not. It's about the things that Fred says. He says, "You have ninjas jump me when I first get here. What kind of greeting is that?" And maybe something should happen to them. Come on, man. maybe something should happen to them. It's such a great veiled threat, right? Like, where a kid doesn't know what the hell just happened, but an adult is like, oh shit, he's really saying some awful things here.
All right, Nick breaks it up. Fred and Willie are bunking together. It's a comically bed for a person of Fred's height.
Like, he meets Santa's, like, Mrs. Claus or whatever. He says, "Annette, you didn't have to get all gussied up on."
That's a funny line. So we have the picture, you know, the shot of him, his legs hanging off the bunk bed, the top bunk and everything. And this is where I wrote the note. I don't know, guys. I do not know.
You sure you wouldn't be more comfortable down here? I don't think it's going to make much of a difference with it. Like, come on, man. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Maze?
Again,
it's a line. It's not that, look, I'm not saying, oh, it's funny that his legs are too long for the bed. I'm saying the line he says, and the way he delivers it, that's what makes it funny.
Now we go to orientation for Santa's workshop with Fred. We have a montage of kids writing letters and then the toy making process. And I wrote, this is a wildly inefficient system for processing millions of letters. And I don't buy that the toys are all built by hand. I just don't.
Okay.
I think the logic is horrible in this movie.
You think the logic of Santa Claus doesn't make a whole lot of sense? Is that what you're saying, Zach?
Well, they took a weird slant on it. I mean,
what was the weird slant? There's a factory. They make it. What are you guys doing here? This movie didn't come up with the concept of Santa Claus having elves making...
Like, Hasbro doesn't exist? Tyco doesn't exist?
What are you... It's Santa Claus. You can't make a movie about Santa Claus where all of a sudden you're outsourcing stuff to Taiwan.
The corporatization of Santa and the North Pole in this movie is oddly relevant to our last movie, Battlefield Earth.
Man animals.
Oh.
It made me think about that a lot during this movie.
Interesting. That's a good call. That's a good call. We're introduced to DJ Donnie, an elf played by Ludacris.
Yeah, I wasn't. This I'm not proud of.
We finally found a weak spot in a means defense. No justification for DJ Donnie.
I think we've established on this podcast with a couple of movies, there are two Americas here, right? A meme?
Yeah,
I don't believe this is the proper representation of your America.
Neither America is what they're going to do. Anything your America is represented is what they think my America looks like.
Right. We're shown a magic snow globe. It lets us know anyone in the world, figure out if they're naughty or nice. We find out there's an efficiency expert arriving soon. In the meantime, Nick wants Fred to mark files naughty or nice. Also, we find out they only play the song Here Comes Santa Claus over the PA system.
So they've got a top 10 most naughty list like the FBI and a NSA snow globe that can peek in on anybody at any time.
Yes, and I did like that they just peek in on a bad kid and this kid comes flying in and bashes the shit out of a dollhouse with some like fungo bat. This kid comes flying in there. I like that a lot. All right, now we're introduced to Kevin Spacey. He plays Clyde, the efficiency expert. Everyone is terrified of him. Spacey believes the demand of wish lists has outgrown Santa's operation. Santa's way far behind. Every child can't get every toy.
Some of the realism that you guys are like clamoring for, apparently.
Yeah, I would like some kind of consistency in this movie. I mean, Spacey says that the board is considering shutting Santa down. They want to streamline, consolidate it, and they want to move the new operation to the South Pole. The Tooth Fairy is on a one-child, one-tooth system. I like that joke. And the Easter Bunny's out. It just doesn't make sense anymore.
I'm with him, dude. Get the Easter Bunny the fuck up out of here.
Wow, you're anti-Easter Bunny.
I'm anti-Easter Bunny, too.
Doesn't make sense. Where does he get the eggs? He doesn't lay the eggs. He steals these eggs.
We couldn't pick an animal that actually lays eggs? We have to pick the one animal that doesn't. Come on now.
Why can't he have a chicken coop?
And it's the Easter fucking chicken that we should be celebrating. Yeah. Like, what's going on?
Why, oh, because the bunny delivers the eggs.
So he's a middleman.
You guys have any idea what Easter is?
Oh, no. What the hell, man? Why does this asshole get the credit? If you buy a TV from Best Buy, you're saying, wow, Best Buy is so great. No, you're saying, wow, this is a great TV.
Fred spies on Wanda with a snow globe. He sees a guy hitting on her, and she says...
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And she says she doesn't have a boyfriend. She gets his card, and she hands him the parking ticket. Oh, by the way, she's a parking maid, right? Is that what they're called?
Meter maid.
Yeah.
Meter maid. Parking
meter maid.
Wow. Parking maid. Fuck is this guy?
Under a lot of pressure here, I mean. Yeah, all right. I'm about to
say, like... This is going on your permanent record, young man.
All right. Fred has a lot of files on his desk. He also can't stand the song Here Comes Santa Claus. Donnie, he goes into DJ Donnie, again, means representation here. He goes into his DJ booth to, and that's his only job, is just keep hitting play. They couldn't just streamline that operation and have him just, you know, put a loop on it.
Or perhaps maybe you get your ass down on the floor and help build some of these toys.
Exactly. Yeah. Donnie refuses to change the song. Fred forcibly changes the song by putting him in a cabinet. We do get an old reference there. He says, I'm going to super nanny you. Remember that show Super Nanny?
Oh, shit. Yeah.
I don't quite remember.
Oh, man. Yeah. He says, I'm going to super nanny this. And that's what he picks him up by his waistband and carries him to the cabinet.
There was like a whole bunch of nanny reality shows, right? Like Nanny 911.
Yeah. Excellent.
Which one was the one with the British lady? Comes in and like,
I think that was Super Nanny. And so he changes the song to, what's the song, Stop, Look, and Listen?
Elvis Rubberneckin' Remix by Paul Oakenfold.
Okay.
No. Remember when, before Calvin Harris, Paul Oakenfold blew the dance remix world.
Is that true?
He was pretty legit. Yeah, I used to listen to him.
That's a world I'm not familiar with, so I'll take your word for it.
Ooh, excuse me.
No, I don't know that. Yeah. I'm not that well versed in like knowing who does what song and what songs are called and all that stuff.
Zach's in bed at 10 o'clock every night with a good book. Doesn't have time for these.
I can't read it, but I just have the good book with me. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to get the elves to dance around the toy shop. This is the requisite Vince wants to show off he can dance scene. That's all this is.
Yeah, I was wondering, has got to be just a Vince Vaughn thing, right? He thinks he's a great dancer.
Yeah, coming off of Wedding Crashers where they talk about how good he is at dancing and stuff. That's all this is. We find out Clyde says that Santa gets 3 strikes, but nobody can know why he's there. They walk in on the toy shop with everybody dancing. Everything has gone awry. That is strike one for no elf discipline. Clyde meets with Fred and Nick, or he meets Fred. Nick's really worried about everything bad that's happening. He's very nervous. Now we run into their parents. Their parents are there for dinner.
Wait.
What I missed?
The whole part where Nick and Fred have the whole conversation about what happened.
Fred blames it all on DJ Downey.
He could play the same song over and over. And then he decided to lay his hands on me and get physical and try to hurt me. Do I want to get physical? Do I want to pound this? Do I want to pound this elf's head in? The answer to that is no. I want to know how it feels not to be respected. And to be honest, if you decide to punish him, I'm not going to be mad at you. I'm not going to be upset with you. If you want to bring the hammer down upon his little DJ hands, do it, dude.
I forgot about that. I forgot to note that rant, but that is a very good rant. See, now he's getting it back. That first rant's terrible, though.
First rant's terrible.
So now we run into the parents. The parents are there for dinner.
He tells a little girl she could get knocked up, man. Like, what part of that is not funny to you?
Fred doesn't want to see the parents. And I put the note here. It took 45 minutes for this movie to get going. We're at 45 minutes into this movie.
I love the first 45 minutes.
Oh, man. They're arguing about going to dinner. Cut to Fred is at dinner with the parents, with the Clauses, and Clyde is also there. Clyde ran into the parents and they invited him to dinner. We find out that while Fred didn't make the anniversary party for his parents, Santa sent a gift in his name. Fred's very contentious. It was a massage chair. Fred's very contentious. Santa's trying to cover everything up. So then Fred has a rant about like the laws of Santa, you know, all the laws Santa Claus is breaking when he goes into, you know, breaking and entering, going into these people's homes, eating,
staring at little children.
Right. Yeah. It's a good rant. His mom wants him to be more like Santa. So he leaves the dinner. Clyde looks at Santa and says this. He says, I love meeting people's families. It's very revealing, very ominous. So now Fred goes to Frosty's Tavern. Willie and Charlene are there. Charlene leaves, says goodnight to Fred, and still can't remember Willie's name.
Is there booze in the eggnog, or are they just drinking eggnog?
No, there's got to be booze in eggnog. Is there any point to having eggnog if there's no, like, rum in it?
Well, but I was thinking, like, elves, or, you know, like, eggnog is booze to elves or some shit. Yeah. But they didn't explain.
Yeah. And I just assumed that that's the only way to consume their booze.
Got it.
It's the only chaser they use.
So now they're at a urinal scene to talk, and Willie kind of unveils that he's, he can't dance and he's very sheepish and everything. And Fred decides he's going to teach him to dance. Another Vince Vaughn dancing scene.
Yeah.
So he's teaching what dancing's all about, says it's a bridge to a kiss. It's terrible dancing from Willie. He starts spinning out of control. He falls on a table right as, oh my God. I mean, Charlene has walked back into the tavern because she forgot her gloves.
Yeah.
Willie's embarrassed. He's ashamed. He walks out. Vince gives him a pep talk about being Blitzen, right? Being the reindeer Blitzen, about how Blitzen didn't fly the first time he tried to. He fell on his face. I don't know. This movie just drags.
Okay, so I'm not totally on board with the whole love interest story between Elizabeth Banks I'm not here to defend or the Vince Vaughn dancing. Those are fair criticism.
We cut to Clyde is shredding kids' letters and he's setting it up to look like Fred is going to get in trouble for it. Nick is concerned. Santa's concerned that Fred did this. Bob the elf and Fred get into it. That's a funny exchange with those two kind of threatening, like veiled threats. Yeah. At each other. Clyde is eavesdropping. He comes in. He gives Nick a second strike for failure to administrate backup records. I missed why, but then the security team comes back in and they attack Fred.
Just to take him to the intervention.
Oh, that's what that is. Oh, okay. Because it does lead to an intervention. Wanda's there. There's a psychiatrist. Mrs. Claus is worried about Santa's health. And we get a mention that it's affecting them in the bedroom, to which Vince Vaughn replies, so Santa's having trouble getting his sleigh off the ground. I laughed at that.
Wait, hold on. The whole interaction between Wanda and Fred.
You know what, Wanda? Do me a favor, please. Why don't you just stay out of this, okay?
Well, I came for the intervention. No. Don't you have a date that you're supposed
to? Don't you have a date with an older guy with real nice hair who forgot to plug his meter in?
Have you been spying on me?
Yes, I have.
Have you got nothing better to do?
I don't like what I've been seeing.
If you've been spying on me properly, then you would know that I didn't end up going out with that guy. It didn't happen.
Yeah, let me just say this to you. It is not flattering on your character to see you with a man who's got liver-spotted hands. It's a very weak choice. It makes you look weak.
Look, I can tell you what your problem is, Freddy. You just won't let anybody love you because you don't think that you're worth loving.
If it pleases the court, did you have an older gentleman ask you out on a date? Yes or no?
Yes, but that's not the point.
Did you say yes or no
today? I didn't see him again.
Then she's a dater.
You push and you push and you push.
Then stop dating. Put down the phone.
That's it. I've had enough. Excuse me, Mr. Santa Claus. It's been very pleasant to come to the North Pole. And, yeah.
Walk out with a date. Go find a date. Maybe good luck with an elf on the way out.
Good luck. Hope it all goes well for you.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of mistletoe out there, so you should be psyched.
Such a dick.
Clyde and Fred have a conversation. We get a glimpse into Clyde's pain about Christmas a little bit and feeling inadequate. I wrote, there's something there. Fred wants to get to the bottom of all this. We find out that Slam has taken over the most naughty spot on the list, on that FBI list.
This part of the movie, I will admit, got me emotional.
It got you emotional?
What?
Yeah, man. Well, this is what happened. So, like, Slam's number one. He says, let me see Slam. He calls up Slam on the globe, and Slam's in the orphanage or whatever. The little kids are talking about what you're going to ask Santa for, and some kids say, it's a family. Another one says, I'm family too, whatever. And Slam says, Santa's not bringing y'all families. He's a clown. He's a fame junkie. Like, that little rant by the kid was funny, but y'all drink the Kool-Aid or whatever, whatever.
Yeah, and he's just regurgitating what Fred told him earlier in the movie.
It's a shell game. But and then he gets in a fight, obviously, because the kid's like, no, Santa's real, da da da. And this is the part, I believe, isn't this the part where Fred gets really emotional and he goes and he says, no such thing as naughty kid.
A naughty kid, right.
Yeah, man. And he starts fucking stamping everything nice, 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 nice. Man, I don't know, man. Even now, man, my voice is cracking a little bit, man. Like, yeah, man, like the poor kid is in the orphanage. How could you call him naughty, man? It's just Slam. No, you guys weren't moved by this scene?
It felt a little forced.
Really?
Yeah, it's just I don't think we needed that. I don't think we needed to get to that place where he then I think he could have just decided, you know what? I don't believe in all these, you know, based on his own stuff. I don't think we needed Bobby J to spur that.
Well, I don't. Well,
cut just, 5 minutes out of the movie right there. But now we're down to an hour and 50.
I quite the opposite, because I think Fred is so much in his feelings that he would never recognize all that until he sees someone that he genuinely cares about, like living a life that's not really his, it's out of his purview control, and just being labeled as naughty. And like, he's like, no, that's fucked up. Like, this kid's not bad. And then maybe there aren't any bad kids. And so he, like, his solution is he's going to be the champion for all these misunderstood kids everywhere who've been deemed naughty by the system, quote unquote.
That's not true. There are bad kids. There's some shitty ass kids out there.
I kind of read it as like he was feeling guilty because they were his words that were coming out of Slam's mouth.
Yeah, sure.
He was just like rejecting the whole concept. And I think that this was supposed to be like egged on by Kevin Spacey's character. Like, Kevin Spacey finally broke him. And
well, I mean, I think it's a combination of things. It's him, his feelings about that, is his feelings that he knows that Slam is just saying what he told him. But also, you know, that Slam, like, the idea that Slam is the number one most naughty kid in the world. Like, no, it's, you know, I think we all have that friend that we know, that guy's a good guy, but like, he just gets a bad rap for this, that, and the other. I think that's what he felt at that moment. He's like, you guys are saying that this kid is the nicest kid in the world, but I know him. I think he's a good kid. And everything he's saying there, by the way, is just what I told him or what I taught him. And so I thought it was a bigger message about, like, you know, kids are kids, and they, most of them are, if they act up, they act up because of their circumstance, not because like they're just born that way, so to speak.
I agree with that, that they're not just born that way, but still shitty kids. This idea that they're not a kid is.
I'm just saying, like, but at that moment when you see the kid that you know and is a great kid and is a funny kid and a sweet kid and a good hearted kid.
Maybe he's not a great kid, though. Maybe he's a terrible judge of character. He's a con man.
Hey, man, that's his boy, man. Look at your nieces. If your nieces, one of them was ranked the number one naughtiest kid in the world, right?
You'd be like, oh, nah, Natalie. I buy it. Natalie, for
oh,
sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, terrible. No, the other ones are great. But yeah, Natalie, I can see that. This everyone's a nice kid has caused a production problem for the toy shop. Charlene reports to Santa that there's no way they can cover all this. Santa confronts Fred about it, saying they can't deliver all those presents. They insult each other, and then they get into a snowball fight. What?
No, Santa delivers a great line here, man. just canceled Christmas for everybody. Lithuania, everywhere in Africa, the whole thing. I just see like two weird random places for him to point out.
That's not good writing.
There's a lot of fat shaming in this scene and in this movie overall.
Yeah, there's a lot of fat shaming. I mean, you could shame fat people in 2007. It was a different time.
And I thought Santa was supposed to be fat. I thought he was supposed to be fat and jolly. That's his whole bag.
Yeah, but he got too fat, right?
Too fat. Didn't he
get too fat? Yeah.
The cholesterol is high, man. Look, man, the dude was fat shaming and unhealthy. The dude was unhealthy, man. Because his wife keep eating him crap.
She's a real problem. That Mrs. Claus.
Yeah, man.
Not very accepting for someone who's supposed to be so joyful.
Mm-hmm. She's got something on her, you know what?
Opportunity. No, that didn't work? Upper chimney? All right. Santa attacks with a snowmobile. Fred says, don't bring a snowmobile to a snowball fight. Fred jumps on. They're fighting with snow. The snowmobile crashes. They're clapped next to each other. And Fred says he wishes Santa had never been born. Santa then tells him who Clyde is, explains the situation, and things are going to get shut down. Fred's leaving, and Mrs. Claus gives him the money that he was promised and a present. Santa is confronted by Clyde and what Fred did. Clyde says there's no way to make the quota. That's strike three. He's shutting them down, and he loves shutting them down. He gives a notice of termination to Santa. He's fired, and now we're back on with Fred. Now we're getting to the best scene. This is the best scene of the movie.
We've talked about this before, how there's sometimes a scene that's written first, and then the movie is conceived off of the scene. I think that's what happened here.
100% that's what happened.
100%.
Yeah, so we're at a Siblings Anonymous meeting, and it's Frank Stallone talking about Sylvester Stallone and how tough it is for him now that Sylvester has risen. He's like, you know, once Rocky came out, everything changed.
And I feel this way all the time. It's not like I didn't want my brother to succeed. We were very close. You know, growing up, I mean, we shared bunk beds. He was my roadie, used to carry my amps. And my mother always told me, since I was a little kid, you're going to support your brother. And so that was going to be my job. And then Rocky came out, and things changed, you know? I was the first guy in line. I mean, I was there. And then when Rocky III came out, I was starting to wonder who Frank Stallone was, you know? It was like identity theft. So you're fighting Rambo, and you're fighting Rocky, and trying to keep them at bay so you can get a little bit of you to come through. Well, anyway, I want to thank you guys for listening. I feel good coming here. I like it here.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing, Frank. Okay, now I think we go to Roger.
I actually have some things I'd like to talk about.
Okay, you're just going to have to wait your turn, all right? Roger's been waiting. We didn't get to him last time, so we're going to go to Roger.
I have a lot of stuff boiling right now, so it could be...
I appreciate that. After Roger. Roger?
I'm Roger. I'm a recovering sibling.
Hi, Roger.
My brother's Bill Clinton. My brother was the president of the United States. You know, I was flipping through the channels on the TV, and on the History Channel was the State of the Union address from 1993. You know, when we left the White House, I thought that it was going to be the first step on the road to recovery. But no, I started to cry again. And I just don't know if I'm ever, you know, going to be able to fully recover now.
Maybe that's a place where I could jump in and then share what's going on with me.
Who are you?
I'm Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hi.
Go ahead. Would you like to take a turn now?
My name is Fred Claus.
Hi, Fred.
Hi. I'm Santa Claus's brother. And I got a lot of stuff going on because of it. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of juice in the tank over it. And
is this a joke to you? Steven, by the way.
Hi, Steven.
Hey, guys, what's up? I mean, because this isn't funny to all of us here in the group. This is very serious to us. And I'm feeling very uncomfortable with where you're coming from.
Steven, maybe to him, his brother is Santa Claus.
I feel like my brother's Santa Claus.
Yeah, but I feel like my brother's Santa Claus because my brother really is Santa Claus.
All right, that's enough, all right? You and I got a problem.
All right, Steven, easy, all right. Steven, easy. That's not Alec, okay? Don't look at me, look at him. That's not Alec.
That's not Alec.
Come on, Alec, you know what I mean? It's like...
All right, let's dump it out.
It's not Alec.
Steven, Alec's not gonna hear that.
How's he gonna?
That's not Alec.
Okay, that's not Alec.
That's not Alec!
That's not Alec!
That's not Alec!
All right. Now that you've got Alec's attention, Steven, what do you want to tell
Steven?
Him?
Steven? Steven? I think I know where you're coming from. Because I used to be really, really angry with my brother. I didn't want to become first brother, especially for the rest of my life. I couldn't control that. I couldn't control being brother of the President of the United States. But I could control being Bill Clinton's brother. And I made the decision, even though I could have brought the house down, I made the decision that for the love of my brother and for the love of my family name, that I was going to do whatever it took because I loved my brother. And I was always going to be there for my brother. And I have been. And you know what? You can be too.
It's one of the best holiday scenes ever. It's really good.
If they start the movie with this scene, I'm more in.
Yeah, actually, if there was a way to, because that sets the tone a little bit better, I think.
Yeah.
And then you could flashback to how they got there, right?
Yeah, gotcha.
I think that's what it was. So now Fred decides he needs to get to the North Pole. He says he has $50,000 to do it. How does he get there in a day? He takes a plane and then a ship and then the Iditarod, you know, dog sled situation. Yeah. There's no way he got up there in a day. Okay, again, the logic of this movie just amazed. Like, are you with me on this? Like, I was confused by this. That ship alone would have been so slow.
It's a children's movie.
Like I said, I'm not trying to stoke the Amin fire too hard with the logistics of this. Sure. He takes the 50 grand that he just got. He dumps it all out on this trip instead of the retail space. Whatever, he gets there. Fine. Montage.
How's Santa making his money to where he just has 50K cash to give?
My biggest question right off the bat is why does Santa have or need money?
And it's American currency up at the North Pole?
It's American currency. Who is this board? Where's his bank account? You know, all right, cool. He's got a bank account.
Is he like Darko Milicic? He just keeps it under a mattress?
Fuck you guys.
All right, Fred gathers all the elves. He's trying to get them to cover the quota in 10 hours. They can't get the kids everything they've asked for, but they can get all the kids something. So the pep talk goes on about trying. I wrote, there's 30 fucking minutes left in this movie. Where is the editing? Santa has thrown his back out. He can't deliver the presents, but only a Claus can fly that sleigh. So it can't just be Willie stepping in. So now it's on Fred to get this done.
Okay, couple things. The psychiatrist from the intervention is now a doctor.
Is that the same guy?
Who knows that Santa threw his back out. He's the one who tells us this. When only a Claus can deliver the presents, it's too bad they didn't call that the Santa Claus, because that's a Tim Allen movie. It's a Claus.
Right, it's a Claus. No? I mean, you're still good with it?
Keep going.
All right, Fred dresses like Santa. It's go time. Elves are making baseball bats and hula hoops. Clyde is blocking Fred from delivering the presents once he gets in the sleigh. Fred knocks him aside. They're airborne. They have 10 hours to deliver everything around the world. We have a present delivery montage. Fred's eating all the cookies.
How do they do that? It takes them way more longer than ever to circumvent the universe, the whole earth, and go to every house.
Yeah, well, just acknowledge that Santa has magic at some point, you know? Like,
well, like, I think it's all implied, man.
Everybody knows Santa has magic, but they don't talk about it. They've been treating it like it's a corporate office this whole fucking time.
I gotta say also, I mean, like, just the routes they took. Wildly inefficient. No wonder they're getting shut down. They don't know how to get anywhere.
Yeah, all those landmarks at the end were all out of order.
He brings Slam, the puppy that he wanted earlier in the movie. Fred sets him straight about the world, gives him a pep talk about believing in himself. Slam gives his wallet back. Slam apparently stole his wallet from Santa. He gives it back to him. He said, "Here, Santa, here's your wallet." And he said, and Vince Vaughn says, "That's a good start. Let's build some momentum with that." I thought that was a good line.
That is a good line.
Clyde shut off the power in the system for the North Pole. He fires the elves.
You're taking a bus back to Elphistan or wherever you're from.
That's not that good of a line. Santa confronts Clyde about him being disappointed in the year 1968. Clyde made the naughty list then. He wanted a Superman cape but didn't get it. He was called Four-Eyed Clyde, and he loved Superman because when Clark Kent was wearing glasses, he was regular, but when you took the glasses off, he was Superman. Santa gives him the cape he always wanted, and I wrote, this is a nice fucking cape. It's a really good quality cape.
Hey, man, Santa Claus. But also... This is also ties in a weird way. I don't know what before, if it came before or after. Remember, Kevin Spacey played Lex Luthor in the Superman
He's
movie.
A big Superman head, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
Him and Nicolas Cage.
Right. Him and Nick Cage and Jerry Seinfeld. The big three. All right. Clyde's moved by. He puts it on. He takes his glasses off. I wrote, this is a really weird scene after Kevin Spacey got canceled. I wonder how many of those movies don't really hold up now because of that, if you view it in that light.
Kevin Spacey, the opposite of Paul Giamatti, a guy who has a lot of goddamn good credits.
Yeah, he really does. Clyde tries to turn the power back on, but it can't. They're doing this blind. And I wrote, the sun is almost up somewhere in the world, which, yeah, always, right? They're racing against the clock, but the sun is, it's the whole world isn't dark on Christmas.
Okay, thank you.
I wrote again, are they taking the most efficient route? They get back. Willie storms up to Charlene. He kisses her. And then Fred walks in. He tells them they finished the job. Now we're watching the magic snow globe as kids open up their presents. Fred brings a gift to Wanda. He breaks and enters into her apartment. She mentions there's a restraining order possibly necessary. The gift is a bear wearing French stuff. They embrace. They're going to live together. Says he has a big surprise. He flies her to Paris on the sleigh.
Company car.
Toy shop is back in business. Clyde is a consultant there now. Fred is coaching a little league team with Slam on it. Slam gets a family. The Claus family is reunited and they love each other. The bird shows up.
The triumphant return of Chirp Chirp.
Chirp Chirp.
Bring it all together.
He says to the kids, when he tells them to take their hats off, show some respect, take off your hat. Don't forget, man is also the word manners. And then he can bring it in for a team chant. And remember, these are children. The team chant is on three. One, two, three. Kill them. Do you want lunch?
I got two notes of trivia here. Or there were prints that were shipped to some theaters under the fake title Brotherly Love for this movie instead of Fred Claus. Why? What would that be like? Was that a considered title?
Maybe it's, you know, sometimes they send out movies under code names.
Okay. And they were worried there was such a demand for Fred Claus. That...
I guess so.
All right. And then the other one, in trying to come up with a name for Santa's brother, Jesse Nelson hit upon Fred while watching The Godfather on television. Fred is an homage to Fredo Corleone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is an amazing piece of trivia.
Yeah, there you go. Should we do a Tony Medley review? We don't have it for Fred Claus, but we do have it for the Dobkin, Vince Vaughn previous team up of Wedding Crashers.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So, well, I'll read the review, and then Amin will have you guess the score. What are reasons a comedy works? Clearly, it's not the reasonableness or the believability of the plot. Bringing Up Baby, 1938, was about a mild-mannered zoologist who got tangled up with a woman who owned a leopard, for heaven's sake. Freaky Friday, 2003, was about a mother and daughter who switched bodies. But director Howard Hawks and screenwriter Dudley Nichols and Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn in the former, and director Mark Waters and writer Heather Hawke and Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan in the latter took silly premises and created magic. So many quote-unquote comedies fall flat on their collective faces. How many really funny films have you seen recently? There have been those advertisers funny like Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Kicking and Screaming just this year that were fatuous and stupid respectively. In Wedding Crashers, John Beckwith, Owen Wilson, and his buddy Jeremy Gray, Vince Vaughn, are living the life of Riley. They crash weddings, meet girls, have their way with them, and move on. I've always liked Wilson, but have only seen him starring in one film that I thought was any good, The Big Bounce, 2004. If you blinked, you missed
what?
Yeah. Yeah, he was in Meet the Fockers 2004, and that was good, but he had an ill-conceived, poorly written cameo, and his segment crashed. Here, he and Vaughn create a comedy duo I'd like to see more, ad-libbing many of their scenes together. Whatever and however they did it, they have a chemistry and repartee that work. It's only fair that I reveal I'm a big fan of Rachel McAdams. She was very good in Mean Girls 2003 as the heavy, and she broke hearts in The Notebook, for my money, 2004's best film. Her performance here, while it takes a backseat to Wilson and Vaughn, is what needs to be as the girl who steals Wilson's heart. There's nothing unbelievable about that because she wouldn't have to steal my heart. I'd give it to her.
Wow.
While there are scenes of questionable taste along with an appearance by Will Ferrell, the film is so good it overcomes those obstacles. Ferrell's shtick is getting hoary, but it's not as bad here as it was in Kicking and Screaming and Anchorman and Melinda and Melinda. This film got an ovation at the media screening, and that doesn't happen often. I mean, what do you think he gave Wedding Crashers?
9 out of 10.
Yes!
Yeah.
That's all Rachel McAdams, right?
You know why it wasn't 10 out of 10?
Will Ferrell?
Like, he was already ready to give his first perfect score ever, and it was like, this guy.
Almost wish he hadn't like continued to rip on him and just said it also featured an appearance by Will Ferrell. Like, oh, I should mention this because it happened, but I have nothing else to say about it.
Oh, man. All right. Amin, phobe or file for Fred Claus? Oh,
come on. Now you know my answer for this. I love this movie. This is one of my favorite Christmas movies. I think it's way better than Elf, way funnier. Way more mature, the comedy, but at the same time, you can show this to your kid like the Santa Claus, right? So to me, total file.
Maze?
Man, this was uninteresting.
Wow.
From front to back.
Hot Rod.
Vince Vaughn was doing his Vince Vaughn thing, but I didn't find it very funny. The weird corporatization of Santa was a slant I didn't understand. They turned Elizabeth Banks into walking cleavage and calculators.
She's smart.
Too much talent in this movie that didn't accomplish anything. It's a phobe.
Wow. All right, so I'm the tiebreaker here, right? I don't think he had his fastball. I really don't. I don't think Vince Vaughn had his fastball. I thought it was a kind of a weak performance by him for the most part. It's way too long. You can cut off 35, 40 minutes from this movie. But I will say there are enough rants. And the scene with the siblings anonymous, I'll file this one. File. It's going to, and it's really that scene that, like, if I know that scene's about to come on and I see it on TV, I will turn it on.
You know, I'm not here to tell you guys that this movie was perfect or flawless. It had its flaws. Like you said, it dragged a little. You really didn't need Elizabeth Banks at all. They could have got any cute woman to play that role, given
it didn't need the CGI that it had for the elves. Limited.
The CGI was a little too much. The love interest story, the dancing, the Vince Vaughn likes to dance. Like, these are all things that you probably could have saved a lot of money and a lot of time and made a better movie without. But overall, man, that's not, like the major fucking line. You see, it's uninteresting. We just named like seven scenes and with lines and stuff that were funny. I could name one in Hot Rod. I could name one in Hot Rod, which is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Vengeful. This feels vengeful.
Bringing up Hot Rod, shock. For a movie that we all hated so much, it sure gets a lot of mentions on this podcast week after week. We got to talk about Hot Rod.
Because it's your North Star when you talk about life.
It was the seminal moment. The seminal moment in this podcast.
Oh my God. Gemini Man.
It sets the baseline for all of your criticisms. Whenever you criticize something for being uninteresting, I'm like, you just watch Hot Rod.
I will. I'll go watch it again.
I will say, though, the logic in this movie is just horrendous. It doesn't make any sense. Movie.
It's not supposed to make sense. It's
I mean, maybe movie. I believe in educating children instead of having them hide behind stupid purposes.
Maybe you believe in bored children as well. And then let's see how that goes. Take them to the movie theater when they're bored. You think they sit still? They don't.
I would never take a child to a movie. No, that's not true. I took my nieces to Sing once. It actually went okay. But here's the thing. I spent like $45 at concession stands because I didn't know what was happening. Yeah.
What are you doing?
They were just like, oh, can I get this candy? I was like, yeah, sure, get whatever you want. Oh, yeah. I didn't know what I mean. I wasn't doing math in my head.
You don't know you can say no to a child?
I'm the fun uncle. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Are you supposed to say no? Are you actually supposed to, if you watch Vince Vaughn enough in this movie, you'll know how to talk to kids in a way that like makes them feel respected and okay with it while still not giving in to their every whim.
You talk to them without my fastball?
Fuck you.